WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, Monday through Thursday from 6 to 7 p.m. and on the Progressive Voices Radio Network at midnight. Thanks for listening.
I'm spending Hanukkah in Santa Monica, wearing sandals, lighting candles by the sea. I spent Shavuos in East St. Louis, a charming spot, but clearly not the spot for me.
This is Andrea Katz, WBAI Interim Development Director, here with Tony Ryan, Interim Operations Director.
We are asking you to help us reach and beat our December fundraising goal through your off-air donation.
From the day after Christmas, December 26th, until December 31st, donate $100 to WBAI and be entered to win the opportunity to guest host the morning show. You'll be invited to work with the producers on an issue important to you.
We will also give away tickets to three listeners and their guests to attend all WBAI events, lectures, and concerts during 2015.
So donate $100 or more in the name of your favorite show for any thank you gift on give2wbai.org or by becoming a BAI Buddy monthly contributor. Just call 212-209-2950 or pledge online at give2wbai.org.
On Saturday, January 3rd, share the victory as we celebrate the release of all the Cuban Five and important moves towards normalization of relations between the U.S. and Cuba. On December 17th, President Obama announced changes in U.S.-Cuba relations and the release of U.S.-held Cuban political prisoners. Simultaneously, President Castro released Cuban-held U.S. political prisoners, and the dawn of a new era of cooperation between our two nations began. This Saturday, January 3rd, we join together at the Martin Luther King Jr. Labor Center, 310 West 43rd Street off 8th Avenue. Reception and food from 6 to 7 p.m. Then the celebrations begin. That's Saturday, January 3rd, 6 p.m., 310 West 43rd Street in Manhattan.
Got questions about your computer?
Mm-hmm.
Want to know about the latest electronics?
Yeah.
Are you confused by high-definition TV?
A little.
Well, tune into WBAI every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for the Personal Computer Show.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's every Wednesday on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Oh.
So why don't you tell a friend?
Well, okay.
And tell your boss.
Well.
Hey, call your mom and tell them about the Personal Computer Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Oh, okay. Hey.
2014.
What are you going to remember?
In 2014, we are well beyond the days when borders can be redrawn over the heads of Democratic leaders.
Let's do it this way. Television, of course, is all right. You appear, but there is no one around, and then everything is put in storage. Let's do it as follows.
Tune in for a shortcut. 11 p.m. New Year's Eve, right here on WBAI-FM.
Citizens of Crimea, who are first and foremost citizens of Ukraine, have been denied their right to objective information, she said, in a newsroom that's now been silenced.
We are now deeply concerned by reports of military movements taken by the Russian Federation inside of Ukraine.
Yes, I share the enthusiasm of Soviet engineers about the cleverness of the American.
And the time is just about 7 p.m. You're listening to 99.5 FM WBAI New York, and it's time for a year-ending edition of Off the Hook. And a very good New Year's Eve evening to you. The program is Off the Hook. Rob T. Firefly here with you. I am joined in the studio by Mike.
Hello.
Let's try that again. I am joined in the studio by Mike.
Good evening.
There you are. And who have we got on the phone with us?
I've been hit. This is Emmanuel here in Hamburg, Germany, joining with Kyle.
Hi.
And we have some guests with us. But we have an answer for you first. Message.
Happy New Year!
2015 has arrived here a bit earlier than it has arrived for you, and we've just blown up a whole bunch of things. So we're going to be blowing up some more things pretty soon.
Excellent. Well, it's the time for it. Am I right in thinking it's actually exactly midnight just now, or just past midnight?
No, you couldn't be more wrong, Rob. It's 2 minutes after 1 o'clock.
Ah.
That's why it's relatively quiet here now. There's only something exploding every 5 seconds instead of five every second.
Well, that explains that.
Yeah, we're going to try and make up for that by blowing up things ourselves.
Emmanuel, do you know why you're beeping all the time?
Why am I beeping all the time? I don't know. Am I a robot?
Well, there's a beep on your line every less than every minute, possibly caused by every explosion, but it seems unlikely.
Well, you might be hearing explosions as beeps, and that is typical of American short-sightedness, of not realizing when something is actually exploding. To you, it sounds like a beep.
Yeah, explosions over the phone.
That is one possibility.
It's just a working theory right now, but that's what I can come up with.
Well, we'll work with it. We'll work with it. So you guys, you didn't just go out there to watch things blow up, did you?
No. We came out here to drink champagne as well. And if you hold on 1 second, we're going to open the bottle.
Is that explosion?
Yeah, a different type of explosion.
But there is some other event going on besides New Year's and drinking and blowing up things.
I'm not sure if you heard that or if you were talking over it, but we just opened up a bottle here and it's over now.
I guess the question on Rob's mind is, why are you in Germany in the first place?
Well, that's a good question. The question is, the best answer to the question is, do you mind not pouring it all over the... Okay, thank you. We were at the Chaos Communication Congress, which is the annual event held by the Chaos Computer Club. It was in Berlin up to a few years ago. Now it's in Hamburg. And I have to say, Kyle and I will give our opinions on the whole thing. It is one of the most incredible conferences. It's huge. It's gotten so big. Mick Fly is here, and he can answer some questions specifically as to how it's grown and some of the particulars. And then we'll talk about some of our impressions as well.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello, Mick Fly.
The CCC Congress has moved to Hamburg in 3 years ago, and in the venue before I had like 3,500 potential places, and the new venue has up to 13,000. So before it was quite a shit. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
We're just processing here with some champagne. Before it was quite an issue to get some tickets. That 1 year we managed to sell out in like 15 seconds. So there was the need to change something. We couldn't find a venue in Berlin that suits the issue, so we moved to Hamburg.
How many people were there this year? Hello?
Did you guys not say anything?
We were wondering how many people were at the conference this year.
Why don't you ask me why that? I'll give the phone back to him.
Hello, Mick Fly again.
Yeah, hello.
We were just wondering how many people were there this year. I remember last year you were excited to tell me it was over 9,000. I'm sure it's even more this year.
Yeah, I don't know the official number because we were already taking down some stuff. But I heard the number is over 11,000 this time, so it has grown a bit more to the upper limit. The big step in the growth was clearly moving to a new venue because the old venue limited us very hard on the 3,500. And the actual choice we made to move was basically done by the questions of how do we decide who, if we only have 3,500 seats, who can come or not. It shouldn't be a money issue. It shouldn't also be an issue that you are able to write your script. You can buy tickets even if they are sold out in 15 seconds. So we really felt that a new venue is needed, and we got so much more space in the new venue. The whole venue just fits in hall one of the new venue, so the whole building, and we have lots more spaces. And one of the new things we brought in was the assemblies, which have been at Hub 2. That actually came to the CCC Congress in 3 years ago, at the 93, and that was one of the big changes, like having the small villages of people doing things all over the place. You can basically walk up and down the building and see something new and something exciting like every 100 meters.
Any assemblies that were particularly highlight for you?
I wanted to mention the assemblies are actually really critical because they're where people get together and think up, and those assemblies eventually become villages on the camp where people can get together and catch up from Congress, maybe share their projects, and literally live together a bit on the campsite. And that's coming up. It's been announced. It's a big deal this summer.
Yeah.
Yes, actually, McFly, can you tell us when the next Chaos Camp will be and where it will be, what kind of a place?
The place will be slightly north of Berlin. It will be in a kind of industrial area building. It's called Ziegeleiparks, a factory where you produce bricks. It's an awesome new venue. We had the Russian airfield for the last two camps, and one of the points you should possibly mention is the camp is only every 4 years. So unlike the CCC Congress, which is every year, the camp is every 4 years, and that will be a very awesome place to go for that time then.
A rare opportunity. Can you use the bricks to build your tent?
No, you can't use those bricks to build your tent, but there will be a lot of other possibilities to build a tank, for example, build geodesic domes or some trucks or other things, and construction with tops in between that then spend nice and big things.
Excellent. So, McFly, what other things have been a highlight for you at this CCC Congress?
Excuse me?
What other things at the Congress have been highlights for you?
The Congress highlights is clearly the point that fingerprints are dead for me. That is one of the points they mentioned they managed to get the fingerprints of the Minister of Defense of Germany just from taking pictures from the hand, and they were able to build replicas out of that fingerprint that actually worked pretty well. The all text-based security system two-factor authorizations are dead. And there are other nice things. The Citizen 4 movie was shown to the hacker scene itself. There was a lot of discussion about hacker ethics and all that stuff and several other interesting things.
Sounds cool.
For those in New York, I finally got a chance to see the Citizen 4 movie. It's still playing here at the IFC Center on 6th Avenue, and I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, and the IFC Center, if I remember correctly, is letting people under 17 see the film, even though it's rated R, because they're choosing to make it more available.
That's fantastic. I hadn't actually seen any of Laura Poitras's photography and work, and it was really amazing to watch that and to watch it with other hackers at an event like this. So take your friends, take your community and share that, because it's a really, really inspiring and really personalizes what it means to be committed to something and sharing information that people need to hear about.
Excellent. And speaking of random information people need to hear about, we've solved the beeping problem. There's a big button on the console that says annoying beeping for, I accidentally left it in the on position. But anyway, so Kyle, what other stuff is going on out there that's been a highlight for you?
Oh, man, well, we're just about to launch right now. I'm sorry, I have to hand you off to Emmanuel. We're in the middle of this.
Yes, launch. Well, I just wanted to say about Citizen 4, because that was something that I saw for the first time in a room with several thousand hackers, which was an incredible thing in and of itself. But this is a film to take anybody to who does not believe that what Edward Snowden did was the right thing, because you'll see him as a human being in the days before his name was even revealed in the hotel, basically just discussing what and theorizing and coming up with all kinds of scenarios as to what was going to happen in the future. It's just it's a really good story, and it's just the most honest representation of all of this. It's a great contrast to the secrecy that his actions are fighting. So whatever Citizen Four is playing in your area, or if it comes out on DVD anytime soon, make sure the people that see it are not just the people that get it already, but the people that don't get it, because there is no better way to convince them than to show them this film.
Those are always the best documentaries, the ones that you can apply to actually open people's eyes a bit. So Kyle mentioned a launch. What exactly is launching out there?
Yeah, okay. Right now we have Renderman on the ground. He is going to be launching... before you light that, Renderman, you didn't light it yet, did you? Okay. Can you describe to us what kind of firework this is?
It's square. It's...
I thought you needed something about fireworks. Okay. All right. So just light the thing and let's see what happens. I'm going to back away a little bit. Get out of my way. Damn it. All right. Hold on.
If there's one thing I know about Renderman, it's never get between him and something he's lighting on fire.
I think... Hopefully you get the point.
It's being made abundantly clear.
Okay, good. Kind of stop anytime soon. How many of these things did we buy?
I think that's the beep right there.
that's one hell of a beep. Okay. All right, well, that was the first one. Hey, Bobson is here. Bobson from Bulgaria. Say hi, Bobson.
Excellent.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Bobson. Welcome to the show.
Well, nice to be here.
I was going to say you're usually on the phone, but you're on the phone this week, too. How are things?
Yeah. Excellent. Happy New 2015, but I guess you have to wait for it for another 5 hours or
yeah.
so.
We haven't gotten it yet, so don't break it or mess it up or anything before we get it, because, you know, it'll be a second-hand year. But how's it going out there for you, Bobson?
Oh, I've had the greatest time over the past week or so, maybe more around Hamburg. Nice to run into your delegate to the Congress. It's their first time in Hamburg, and I think they had great fun as well.
Excellent. Now, you've been there before, right?
To the Hamburg location? Oh, yeah. And third year going.
Excellent. How's it been growing and changing in the time you've been going?
Well, this year we had the entire building all to our own. There was no place that wasn't ours for the duration of Congress. First year we only had part of the Congressional Center where we're at. And last year, which was the second year on this location, we had all of the meeting halls and lecture halls and all that. But there still was a small canteen type place that was being serviced by people who are actually contracted to service events at the venue with food and that. But this year there were just our folks cooking for everyone. So here's Emmanuel wanting to speak to you, so I'll be heading up.
Is he still hanging
around? Have a great New Year.
Happy New Year, Bobson.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, I just want to remind people that we are, this segment of the program is really going to be only until about 5:30. Then I think Bernie's coming in. We're going to take phone calls a little bit later on. So we have to move fairly quickly here from Hamburg, where it's just turned New Year's. I wanted to, Renderman, after risking his life lighting those fireworks, I wanted him to step in. He came over here from Canada to CCC and has stayed on in Hamburg. And has some comments, I believe.
Hello, all.
Hello, Renderman.
It was my first CCC. Absolutely amazing conference. Just the people are great. The amount of big hacker family thing. You know, running into people at the airport, and you know, hackers tend to stick out of the airport. But next thing I know, I'm having coffee with them. It's great. You know. Halfway around the world, and still feels somewhat like home.
It's great. What sort of
sounds in the background?
what sort of shenanigans are you getting up to out there besides blowing things up?
Maybe there's other shenanigans besides blowing stuff up. No, seeing the sights. First time spending time in Germany, and beautiful place, and I don't know, it's just always nice to see people and new perspectives on things. To hear, you know, Laura Petraeus and, you know, see Citizen Four and everything is just, you know, as it was being said, you know, seeing it with a bunch of other hackers is, you know, something else. It's, you know, it was done by and for the kind of community, and just it's really nice to share it.
It certainly sounds like an experience, and I'm sorry I can't be out there with you guys, but I'm enjoying it vicariously through you, so have extra fun for me.
Yeah, well, if you were out here, you'd probably be ducking a lot, because it's getting pretty interesting out here.
Well, I live in New York. That's what I'm doing all the time. But thank you very much.
Yeah, well, bigger artillery here than New York, so.
Excellent. Well, it's always good to hear from you, Renderman, and stay safe. Come back with all your extremities.
Well, do they still have to be attached?
It's really a decision I don't think we can make for you from this across the ocean.
It's just the hassle of having to check them in your luggage.
Good insurance.
Yes.
All right.
Happy 2015.
He's Canadian. I think Canadians have health insurance.
Okay, folks. The Renderman is going to set up the second batch of fireworks right now because the thing is you're required to light them every, was it 7 minutes? Or you have to, like, get out of the street. So we're lighting the second batch now. But I wanted to tell people, actually, Renderman, don't do that yet. I just wanted to tell people first. we had this amazing event at CCC. There were so many, good talks taking place. Kyle and I wandered into this massive room at one point just because we wanted to sit down, but we wound up seeing a talk by, a parliamentarian from the EU Parliament, member of the EU Parliament who was elected as part of the Pirate Party in Germany, and she was talking about how they're going to be fighting copyright in 2015. It was just such an incredible thing to walk in there and see that somebody who is part of this community is actually part of the government as well. It's a tiny part, one person doing all this, but that one person is actually in there influencing people, and it's that kind of magical spirit that you see in a place like this, and hopefully we'll see that someday in our country, because this is really how you affect change, how you get things to be different. But there are other places too. There are many talks going on in impromptu areas, literally in hallways, upstairs by the massive room number two. There is an impromptu tea house where people would just come and have tea around the clock. You just sit down, and somebody would come and give you tea. There were tea masters. There were instructions on how to become a tea master. There were all sorts of rules and but, you know, pleasant rules, things like that, and people to meet, and it was just amazing. What happened there on the last day of the conference was something really incredible. It was 25 years ago, in 1989, that the historic gathering known as the Galactic Hacker Conference, Galactic Hacker Party, took place in Amsterdam, and that was when so many people met for the first time. So many countries, hackers from different countries, got together. It was the first time I had ever gone to Europe. I met Rob, I met Andy from CCC, I met Val Holland, and basically what they did on the last day was have a reenactment of a debate or a conversation between Val Holland, who was one of the founders of the Chaos Computer Club, and Pengo, who was a hacker who had actually sold information to the KGB and basically brought disgrace to many in the hacker world. And there was a debate. Val Holland was very upset with him about this, and Pengo was defending his actions, saying that he had no morality and basically this was the right thing to do. Now, this conversation had taken place in 1989 at the Galactic Hacker Party. I was not able to understand it because it was in German, but here it was presented in English. And it was just an incredible thing to look back on that and hear people's perspectives on intelligence communities and what hacker ethics are all about. And it just made you realize that, wow, this conversation has been going on for such a long time. It has become such an important conversation. It's one that continues. It's one that will always continue. And it also, it was kind of an interesting reflection too, because here you have this guy, Pengo, who had basically turned to the dark side and taken hacker knowledge and given that to the intelligence agencies. And you contrast that with what Edward Snowden has done, who was connected with the intelligence agencies and turned around and gave all that information to the community. And it makes you think that something good is happening. There is hope. There is a possibility of some sort of progress. But just little magical moments like that. And we have them at Hope, too. Things you wouldn't expect, things that happen in out of the way places, and just interactions and people you meet and talk to. That is the magic of a hacker conference. That's why everybody should go to the Chaos Communication Camp in August. And by the way, I don't think McFly gave the date. It was August 13th through 17th. And there'll be all sorts of information about that, events.ccc.de. And now, Renderman, you're going to light our next selection. Do you have anything to say about this? There's two fuses, I noticed.
Yeah. Just make sure that all the same parts go into the same box if this thing goes really badly. So just, you know, make sure it's all right. You know.
Okay. Are you going to light both fuses or just one?
It depends. If I get one lit and the other doesn't want to go right away, I'm running like hell. So.
Okay, most people want you to light both. So why don't you go and do that? I'm going to move over here. And guys in New York, cover your ears. We don't know what's going to happen with this. Okay? We really shouldn't still be there, should he? Okay. All right. Oh! These things are shooting up in the air, going about six stories up in the air, and I think there's one left that's going to... Okay, we're good.
Okay, you're
you
still
can
with
buy
us.
These things. Yeah, I'm still with you, hopefully. these things can be bought in supermarkets, all in all sorts of places, and anybody basically can buy them on New Year's Eve and the days before New Year's. You see kids walking around with fireworks packages that are bigger than them. It's really an amazing thing. We were in a supermarket before, and there's aisles of champagne and fireworks in the next aisle. So it's an incredible spirit that takes over this part of Europe in late December. And,
Emmanuel,
I hope that you have yes.
If I understand correctly, you could have bought these fireworks, but you no longer can.
You know what? Actually, McFly, can you buy fireworks still?
Sorry?
Can you buy fireworks after midnight on January 1st?
Nope.
So I couldn't buy fireworks right now.
Yeah, so you got to ration carefully.
So basically, maybe we could resell this for a lot of money. I'm thinking like an American.
This is a very American approach. I just wanted to say that, yes.
All right, listen, we know we're running out of time. We have one final bit of fire. Are you lighting that, Kyle?
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. You have anything final to say before you... Okay, hold on. Get away from there.
You know, the only thing better than watching fireworks on TV is listening to them on the radio.
I think part of me is on fire, actually, because that was a string of firecrackers that threw sparks in the air. And all right, everything's okay now, though. But that was it. That was our final roll of fireworks.
Yeah, I just want to say Happy New Year, and everybody get organized and have fun in 2015. And I'm looking forward to a lot of change in the world and good things.
Yeah, I hope you guys have a happy New Year there in New York. And actually, you know, Kyle and I will be moving on from here. We're going to be visiting some hackerspaces in Austria, I believe, Salzburg, Vienna. They also have radio stations there, which are amazing, that we might even be on. Also, possibly, we'll be going to Budapest, Prague, Bratislava, places like that. So if anybody out there... would like us to drop by, if you have a hackerspace or something interesting to show us, write to us, oth@2600.com.
Definitely. And we'll be expecting lots more reports on the cool stuff you're seeing out there. Very happy 2015 to you guys. And
all right. Have a happy new year.
Excellent.
Yes, definitely. And please wish Bernie a happy new year for us and all of our WBAI listeners. Thank you so much for all your support over the years. And let's make 2015 a great one.
Very much so.
All right. Happy new year.
Happy New Year. Okay, and with that, I will let those guys go, and I will bring Bernie S. in so we can do the rest of the show. While I'm doing that, I think I'll leave you with some tunes. That was the dulcet tones of boxing. You can find that on phonelosers.org. And I think we've got Bernie S. with us now. Bernie, are you there?
Greetings and Happy New Year from Philadelphia, Bob.
Excellent. I've been told to pass on Happy New Year greetings to you from our friends who are elsewhere. They're in Germany.
In Hamburg?
Yep. Hamburg, where it's already been the new year for about an hour and a half now.
I bet that was a rather explosive...
It was quite explosive.
Booming New Year there.
If you want more information on explosions in Hamburg, refer to the first half hour of this very program.
Okay, great.
Yeah, as I was saying, you know, the only thing better than watching fireworks on television is listening to them on the radio. So I think we've well served our dear listeners. So Bernie, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I just arrived in Philadelphia from a trip and getting ready to celebrate here and to participate, well, not actually march in, but... participate in the festivities at the Mummers Day Parade, which is a crazy Philadelphia tradition.
The Mummers Day Parade?
Mummers. This is where a lot of people dress up in feathers and garish costumes and march down Broad Street. It's been going on for over a century, and you've got to be there to appreciate it. It's pretty crazy.
And they haven't finished yet?
No, they will start this parade tomorrow morning, New Year's Day.
Okay, well... it's 2015 is what's coming up, and we've got a little bit of news to talk about. There's been stuff going on this week.
Yes.
All sorts of interesting things. One of them was Skype. It's come out, this is from Ars Technica, that a National Security Agency document published this week by the German news magazine Der Spiegel from the trove provided by former NSA contractor Edward Snowden shows that the agency had full access to voice, video, text messaging, and file sharing from targeted individuals over Microsoft Skype service. The access mandated by a foreign intelligence surveillance court warrant was part of the NSA's PRISM program and allowed sustained Skype collection in real time from users identified by their Skype usernames. Is this surprising to any of us, really?
Well, as some of us may remember, Skype started out as a Swedish company, which would not be subject to U.S. laws or the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act or any of these things. But it got later, years later, it got purchased by Microsoft, which we know is in bed with the NSA. And sure enough, now we have evidence of that from courtesy of Edward Snowden.
Yeah, there's an excellent series of articles that Der Spiegel published simultaneously with a talk given at the Congress by Jake Applebaum and Laura Poitras. I watched the talk. It's on video. You don't have to go to Germany to see it, and you don't have to go to Germany to read the Spiegel, because their articles are on their website in English. And they had two articles, one about cryptography, one about CIA drone killings, both accompanied by large numbers of previously unseen documents. And I don't want to say they're good, because they're really frightening stuff, but they're well written and well reported. I'll give them that.
And that's what's it really speaks to how much of a it's pretty intense the way that things are still coming out of this stuff that Edward Snowden now leaked. How long ago was it now? We're still going through this.
Early last year.
Yeah, early last year, and we're still finding things like this in it, and it's something to keep an eye on. Elsewhere in the world, India. There's a big story coming out of India where they've just decided to block 32 websites, Pastebin, GitHub, Internet Archive, Vimeo, and a lot of other sites. It appears that the order to block the sites was issued on December 17th. It's now starting to be put into effect sort of sporadically. The Center for Internet and Society in Bangalore, India, the policy director from there, Pranesh Prakash, posted a copy of the notice listing the 32 blocked URLs. He posted this to Twitter. Now, the URLs that are blocked are Pastebin, which, for those who don't know, is a site where you can just copy and paste bits of text and put them up there for other people to see. A whole bunch of sites that are basically Pastebin clones that do the same thing, but then it gets more interesting. Archive.org, the Internet Archive, is blocked. Video sites like Vimeo.com, Dailymotion.com, they're both blocked. Web hosts like Webs.com, Weebly.com, Freehosting.com, they're blocked. GitHub.com was part of this block. And Mike, how would you explain GitHub for those unfamiliar?
GitHub is a website that people use to collaborate mostly on software projects. And it uses a thing called Git, which has a lot of nice features for keeping history of your work so that if you mess up, you can get back to the version that worked, and for collaboration. I and many other people use it all day professionally, and presumably many people in India are totally in trouble not being able to access this website to do their daily work. There are solutions. One nice thing about Git is that if you've ever had a copy, you have a copy of everything, so you can get along for a while without it. But they have some very nice collaboration tools built on top of it. And whatever the Indian government is afraid of, they've clearly blocked a lot more than that.
And another thing that was blocked was a project on SourceForge.net, an open source project called Forkie. That's Phorkie. To block an entire software project is pretty overreaching. But what this project is a self-hosted Pastebin clone that you could install anywhere and host anywhere and have a running Pastebin clone. So they've really got it out for these Pastebin type sites. It seems Arvind Gupta, the national head of Indian political party Bharatiya Janata Party (BJP). Had posted to Twitter that the websites that have been blocked were based on an advisory by Anti-Terrorism Squad and were carrying anti-Indian content from ISIS.
The BJP, of course, is the ruling party.
Indeed. So when you're talking about subversive anti-India content from ISIS on sites like GitHub or Pastebin or SourceForge, I think this might be a bit of an overreaching bit of censorship. What do you guys think?
I really wonder what these governments are thinking to block. They're really harming their own economies by blocking these developers' websites. Terrorists are going to be anywhere. It doesn't, you know, just because they might be exchanging software code on a massive web platform like GitHub does not mean that the platform or that medium is really poses a risk to that government's national security. That is really crazy.
I mean, it's a clear case of government overreach, as with almost every government censorship attempt we've ever seen. You know, these services are all nice because they allow you to share programming code, which is just text, so you can share any other kind of text, including, I suppose, text about terrorism or violence or anything else. But rather than go after the specific offending content, they've just gone over after the entire platforms. I'm trying to think of a metaphor. It would be the equivalent of banning libraries because you don't like one book in it. It's just nuts. And
or Gmail in China, which was recently blocked. You know, it's like if they don't like some people that are communicating on Gmail, why not just block all of Gmail? You know, it's just crazy.
Yeah, and this is the sort of thing we're always we're talking about things like government censorship and how it could overreach and be used either through deliberate malice or through just incompetence and not understanding what they're blocking. It will end up with a whole lot of collateral damage, and we would see that with GitHub and with SourceForge. And this, it's whatever they are trying to block, they're blocking a whole lot more than that just by blocking these sites in total. The Times of India at the time this story was posted said that they were able to access all the websites that were blocked over Airtel 3G, but not under their standard, I guess, land-based ISPs.
I mean, it seems like there's some delay in the rollout of this to all the internet service providers, and so some are blocking more than others at any given moment, but this is a court decision that all the ISPs have to block it all, and we'll watch the story and hope it gets reversed, but it's just insane.
It's very insane. Some other stories going on. Hey, guess what we get to talk about? You know that whole Sony North Korea thing?
Really? Really?
I knew you would like this, Mike.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the one thing that happened after we went off the air last week is on the 29th, North Korea's internet went out again. The whole country lost their internet.
How much internet do they have to lose? Like,
I don't know, but the people there with internet, those privileged few, I'm imagining, lost it at around 7:30 p.m. on the 29th Pyongyang time. The same incident occurred earlier that week when the country's internet connection was disrupted that Tuesday, the 27th, I believe that would have been. CNET reported that North Korea is blaming the United States for these internet disruptions. Yeah, and I'm sure blaming a foreign country for something that that is probably not the act of an entire foreign country. I don't know. That can't end badly at all, can it?
I mean, you raised the point that it's very difficult to determine the source of whatever brought down North Korea's internet, just as it is difficult to determine the source of whoever took documents from Sony.
And I'd like to point out, too, that more and more U.S.-based internet security firms and experts are challenging the FBI's rather hasty conclusion that North Korea was behind this Sony hack. There's a lot of very plausible rebuttals to the FBI's theories which are lacking in detailed information. Which the FBI is saying, oh, we can't reveal these secrets that led us to make this determination. This whole thing reminds me of something that happened back in, I guess, 1996. The FBI is very fallible, and they make claims about things that happened that didn't really happen. And back in 1996, folks in the New York area may remember TWA Flight 800, I think it was, that blew up and crashed just off the South Shore of Long Island. And the FBI hastily concluded that it was a terrorist action, and then saw to it that all people flying out of the United States or flying anywhere in the United States
had to show government photo ID to board a commercial aircraft. Sometime later, it was determined that this was not a terrorist action at all. It was an accident. There was chemicals and a spark to something that blew up the fuel tank from a spark and a wire or something. But that was the official conclusion after a long study. Yet the security restrictions that were issued at the behest of the FBI were never lifted. So the FBI makes mistakes sometimes on purpose. And we already know that from the leaked Sony emails that a very high level ranking U.S. State Department person gave an enthusiastic thumbs up to the scene in the film where the leader of North Korea was violently burned and blown up. So I think the FBI has the U.S. government clearly has an axe to grind with North Korea and vice versa. But it seemed this conclusion by the FBI was very hasty, and it's encouraging to see a lot of U.S. experts calling them on that, saying, no, prove it.
Yeah, it is interesting. You know, lots of luminaries, lots of well-known and respected individuals in the security industry have come up and spoken up against the FBI's hasty conclusions. Bruce Schneier, who I think everybody in the world loves.
He's a Hope speaker.
He's been a Hope speaker, of course, and he's been raising questions on his blog. The LA Times spoke to someone at a security firm called Norse, who is not convinced that anything came from North Korea. Kirk Stamberger, a senior VP at Norse, said in an interview that, quote, "We can't find any indication that North Korea either ordered, masterminded, or funded this attack. Nobody has been able to find a credible connection to the North Korean government." A team of nine analysts over at Norse dug through data, including their worldwide network, quote, of millions of web sensors. Bit of marketing.
What does that mean?
It means that they're good at getting some marketing in when talking to the newspaper. But in internal Sony documents and underground hacker chat rooms, they're citing underground hacker chat rooms as a source, which always goes well.
Rob, I have a question. The studio that you and I are in right now is underground.
It is.
Does that count?
I think so. And we're in a room where hackers and we're chatting. So this studio is an underground hacker chat room. I'm declaring it. I'm calling it.
All right.
I can do this sort of thing when I'm in charge of the engineering board here.
Seems fair to me.
Hey, Rob, wasn't there a recent study on the linguistics of the code for this malware that was used to attack Sony with? And the linguistics indicated that it was much more likely to be have written the code was or the attack might have been written by Russian-speaking individuals and much less likely to be North Korean. And also, wasn't there a lot of information that was in the code that probably could have only come from a deep Sony insider? That's some of the claims happening now.
Yep, that's some of the claim happening now, and it would make a whole lot of sense to anybody who knows how these things usually work.
The linguistic evidence, while not conclusive, is pretty interesting. The people who did this made public statements, and it does not appear that English is their first language, or they were deliberately making mistakes to conceal who they were. But either way, the mistakes that were in the document seem not to be the kinds of mistakes that native Koreans would make when speaking English, native Korean speakers. So that's interesting, although certainly not conclusive.
So the plot thickens, which being in the movie industry, I'm sure they wouldn't know anything about thickening plots, but the plot thickens. And another thing to come out of this whole mess is Sony is about to get sued for pirating music in the interview. This story out of off of Torrent Freak. As the controversy surrounding the interview continues, a singer is claiming that after failing to reach terms with Sony, the company put her music in the movie anyway. After not receiving a penny from the movie giant, Yoon Mi-ray is now set to sue. Yoon Mi-ray, real name Natasha Shanta Reed, is a U.S.-born hip-hop and R&B singer. And in January 2013, as part of MFBTY, which stands for My Fans Better Than Yours, the 33-year-old hit the number one spot in the Korean music charts and in September reached the same heights on Billboard's K-pop Hot 100. But while these recognitions were achieved by fans buying her music, she's now in the spotlight for not getting paid for her work. She was in negotiations with Sony to have her track Payday appear in the interview. No agreement was reached, and Sony just put it in the film anyhow.
Wow.
of all the tracks, they took one called Payday?
They took a track called Payday from an American musician making music for Korea. And they
I mean,
Think she wouldn't notice? I mean, until this whole, data theft story got into the news, probably no one would have ever seen this film, so it might have been likely they could have gotten away with it, but I guess they didn't replace it when they got all this free publicity.
It's pretty funny. I mean, for any Sony executives listening, I mean, let me put it to you this way. You wouldn't download a car. You wouldn't steal a car. You wouldn't... I would download a car, but...
Why wouldn't you download a car? No, isn't that the future?
Yeah, I used to do 3D printing. I did download several cars, and I printed them out, and they're on my shelf now. So Sony's finding themselves the targets of a lawsuit, and that should be fun. I want to get to some listener emails. We had a story we talked about last week about the hotel chain that wanted to block people opening up their own Wi-Fi points in the hotel. We got a lot of response to that. Night Owl had sent us the link to the text of the Marriott filing to the FCC. It's available on for anyone listening to this with a pause button who can get this whole URL. I'll read it to you. apps.fcc.gov/ecfs/document/view?ID=60000. That's 4 0s. 986-872. Night Owl.
Well, you can just email us it off the hook, and we'll send it to you.
Yeah. I bet if you type like Marriott FCC filing into a search engine, it will come right up as well.
Yes, indeed. But Night Owl also comments, as Recode noted, there are some very worrying clauses in the filing. In some cases, they conflate natural limitations of the RF spectrum with defending against viruses, and elsewhere, they completely ignore non-technical remediation techniques, e.g. customer education and improved communication, all in a manner designed to allow them to get new rules passed to authorize Marriott to block all Wi-Fi networks on their premises. It's definitely worth looking further into. It's a very interesting story, and we're interested to see where this goes. Obviously. Pyro also wrote to us about this, asking if the FCC does reverse its decision, will they have to refund the $600K they already fined them?
I think that's highly unlikely. I think it's highly unlikely the FCC is going to reverse their decision. And two, the government never likes to give money back. So I think no on both counts.
Yeah, it doesn't seem very likely. It's kind of nice to hold out hope.
Bernie, there's a mistake in your analysis, though.
Yeah, what's that?
The government here is not dealing with normal people, but with large corporations.
This is true. They tend to. The U.S. has often given many, many financial breaks to industry. But in this case, I think the FCC has actually the FCC and I know people at the FCC who really care about the public interest, and I don't think they would have brought this action against this Marriott partner had they not had the public interest in mind. So I'm hoping they stay the course with that, and we'll see how that works out.
I hope so as well, but I think it's not certain.
I agree. It's not certain.
This is the FCC... You know, sometimes makes good decisions when they do things quietly, and they sometimes make terrible decisions when they do things quietly. But, you know, just the right amount of public pressure from large corporations without this story getting big enough for there to be real public pressure from the real public could go a long way towards making bad things happen.
Yep.
Definitely worth a look. We also got a nice email from Ben regarding the story, and he mentions the he mentions a simple fact that you can go to any Home Depot or other home supply place and obtain wallpaper that contains a copper mesh, which is essentially a Faraday cage, which would prevent the leaking of the hotel's Wi-Fi signal outside of in the room that was covered, suggesting that the Marriott just installs this simple non-technical fix to it instead of getting legislation passed to allow them to do all sorts of shady things with outside Wi-Fi points. He says, Ben says, you would think a multinational corporation would be aware of this fix, just saying. If it's not obvious enough, this would prevent man-in-the-middle hyper-attacks on the Wi-Fi or brute force attacks, simply because most of these types of attacks would not be perfect rated by somebody staying in the hotel. And obviously, an attacker would not register his or her credit card or information with or identification with the desk clerk at a hotel they were planning on attacking. Basic security precautions could be taken, Ben says, by the network administrator. This is one layer of physical security that the hotel maintenance man could implement, which would solve almost 100% of their alleged problems. He also says, P.S., love the show, just donated to the radio station after writing this email. Thank you very much for that.
If anyone wants to join Ben in donating, you have just 4 hours and 10 minutes to get a text donation in the current year, if that's something that interests you.
Yes, indeed. And WBAI is also having a neat sort of sweepstakes. If you donate before the end of the year, which is in 4 hours, you can find information on that. I don't know if you would call it a sweepstakes, but it's sort of an extra thing that there's a possibility of you getting if you donate a certain amount. You can find all that on WBAI.org within the next 4 hours and change. But on the subject, we are also still getting mail from some of you who haven't gotten your NSA drives, your Snowden drives. And We just want to remind you that, yes, we do want to hear about it. If you ordered a premium from us way back, if you didn't get it yet, we do want to hear about it, because when it comes to the thumb drives, we gave them to the station. They're in the hands of people at the station. So if they're not getting to where they need to go from there, we need to know so we can investigate what's going on and try and make that happen. So we do want to get you your past premiums. We do want to hear about it. If you haven't gotten them, send us an email at oth@2600.com and let us know about it. The information we need is what your pledge was, the name and address on the pledge, and what item you pledged for. And we do want to hear about it. The situation with that is ongoing, and we're still working on it. But we thank everyone for their support and for bearing with us when stuff does not go completely our way, and we have to work a little harder to make it all happen, as we're doing now.
And I want to give a shout out to the volunteers. There's a lot of volunteers that work at WBAI, specifically trying to clean up this premium mess. But it's become apparent to us that some of these volunteers, or maybe all of them, aren't being given the accurate information they need to fulfill these premiums. And that comes down to WBAI management, who we, for some reason, can't get to respond to our inquiries. So that's what's going on, and we're sorry for all listeners that aren't getting their premiums. We're working on that, but it's a WBAI management issue at this point.
Yep, and we are still working on it. We're not letting it go. We're not hoping it goes away. We are still working on it, trying to get in touch with management, in touch with the right people, get the right things going in the right places. So, this is ongoing, and we're working on it, and thank you for understanding. Let's see, what else is going on?
Did you see the story? It really snuck by everyone's radar. The NSA, on December 24th, released their internal self-audit, as they were required to do, because the ACLU won a FOIA lawsuit. But they were not required to do it exactly on Christmas Eve, but they did because they knew that most of us would miss it. And there's a lot of stuff, you know, that there. It seems that most of the abuses that they find are self-reported, which is super for the honest people who mess up, who work at the NSA and look at something they shouldn't. But what it means is that there's no technical controls in place to prevent the NSA from violating its own policies, and there's no detection for NSA employees who violate the policies and don't self-report. And, you know, this leads to the kinds of abuses that we've heard about and speculate about. And I highly recommend you take a few minutes to look up this report and read about it.
Definitely worth looking up. We're almost out of time. Just want to mention, on Friday, 2600 meetings happening all over the world. Go to 2600.com/meetings to find the one by you. If there's not one by you, there's also information on that page on how to start one by you. We're almost out of time. Bernie, any last words?
I just want to say happy new year to everybody and thank them for supporting the show and WBAI. There's a few hours left. You can go to give2wbai.org to get your last minute pledges in to keep the station on the air. It's still struggling financially, but next year will be a better year, we're convinced. And I just want to thank everybody for listening. This has been quite an honor to be on this show for so long.
Yes, indeed. Mike, any parting words for 2014?
No, just again, to echo what Bernie said, we want to wish you a happy new year, a guten Rutsch, and all the best for the coming year.
Yes, indeed. And for Off the Hook and for my colleagues, those with us and not with us right now, thank you very much for continuing to listen and letting us be part of your day. It's definitely an honor, and it's something that I enjoy very much, and long may we keep doing it. Now, to close out the year, I'll close this with the only sort of thing I can. A bit of Back to the Future Part 2, thanks to comedian Rob Tantrum for this track. Send us email, oth@2600.com. Stay tuned for the Personal Computer Show.
Happy donut. Yeah. In the city, Tantrum. Equalizers. Back to the Future Part 2.
Hey, you know what? Watch the series of movies first before you listen to this. Welcome back to the future part two. Who am I? Billy, you ain't followed Huey or the news. Here in Inner City Tantrum, but I'm about to introduce Inner City Tannin. Way I make the timelines. You this tangent of music, tangent of doing, can't be confused. Been happening this. I've been rapping, topics using. You're gonna drop that trash and miss the fusion. Learn to take a joke, though we ain't even competing. You see, you're headed down one road, and where I'm going, I don't need them. Wait a minute. Rob, are you telling me you built a hip-hop beat at Alan Silvestri's Back to the Future theme? The way I see it, if you produce something, why not add your style? Ain't got me losing sleep, this been my loser dream for a while. Size, it don't matter, if you hear me, man, I'm mass over volume. Hence, I'm density, I guess I mean, the ring game, I'm your destiny. The same thing goes for those who second-guessing the adventure scene. Eventually, we'll have to tie, I'll lead to faster scene. Don't match me, you have to be imagined. I'm traveling at fast speed, all that is happening in alternate reality. Cause all that is happening is caught in totality. Invalid analysis. Your first listen, risking chances, bitches. I ain't chicken. Dialysis kicking. What you trying to give me? This man, principle strictly, strictly about the principle. One hell of a face if this says I'm able to sign the principle. What the hell is going on? You're forgive me for staring. You spitting nonsense like Libyan terrorists. Welcome back to the future part two. Who am I? Billy, you ain't followed Huey or the news. Here in Inner City Tantrum, but I'm about to introduce Inner City Tannin. Way I make the timelines. You this tangent of music, tangent of doing, can't be confused, been happening. Ish, I've been rapping, topics using. You're gonna drop that trash and miss the fusion. Learn to take a joke, though we ain't even competing. You see, you're headed down one road, and where I'm going, I don't need them. English rhyme, here, let me demonstrate. Imagine that this line represents time past, future, present date. And while my rhyme might resonate in several ways, you sense the change and hesitate. Like, wait, maybe this bike could climb inside our window by mistake. It's okay if you're hating on it. This should be tricky, you ain't privy to its latent content. But it does hold water, so in case you're waiting on it, know it takes some power on your end before you skating on it. Just explain and promise, this ain't meant to be a diss. Trying to be an artist, I don't vote for politics. Man, no East Coast, West Coast beef, New York and Cali. Just re-elect Gold D from Mayor Hill Valley. Here to set the score straight, got the score straight set. Almanacs is in a Windsor, go and place your best. In brief, they label me the best, I respectfully decline. No, I do got on a vest, though, if you're gunning from behind. Welcome back to the future part two. Who am I? Billy, you ain't followed Huey or the news. Here in Inner City Tantrum, but I'm about to introduce Inner City Tannin. Way I make the timelines. You this tangent of music, tangent of doing, can't be confused, been happening. Ish, I've been rapping, topics using. You gonna drop that trash and miss the fusion. Learn to take a joke, though we ain't even competing. You see, you're headed down one road, and where I'm going, I don't need them. Honestly, show some love. Johnny B. Dope is tough. Some $100 or at the very least.
This is Andrea Katz, WBAI Interim Development Director, here with Tony Ryan, Interim Operations Director.
We are asking you to help us reach and beat our December fundraising goal through your off-air donation.
From the day after Christmas, December 26th, until December 31st, donate $100 to WBAI and be entered to win the opportunity to guest host the morning show. You'll be invited to work with the producers on an issue important to you.
We will also give away tickets to three listeners and their guests to attend all WBAI events, lectures, and concerts during 2015.
So donate $100 or more in the name of your favorite show for any thank you gift on give2wbai.org or by becoming a BAI Buddy monthly contributor. Just call 212-209-2950 or pledge online at give2wbai.org.
Got questions about your computer?
Mm-hmm.
Want to know about the latest electronics?
Yeah.
Are you confused by high-definition TV?
A little.
Well, tune into WBAI every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for the Personal Computer Show.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's every Wednesday on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Oh.
So why don't you tell a friend?
Well, okay.
And tell your boss?
Well.
Hey, call your mom and tell them about the Personal Computer Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Oh, okay.
Welcome to the Personal Computer Show, New Year's Eve 2014 edition. Next week, we begin a new year. This holiday show is pre-recorded, so we are not taking any telephone calls. We have lined up a list of year-end topics to be presented by members of the staff. On the show, the listener may hear contradictory statements, but, as in computing, there is more than one way of solving a problem. The view of each person may or may not be representative of the entire staff, but with an expanded perspective, the listeners get the benefit of all advice given. But before we get to those reports, let's first hear from Joe King.
On August 6, 1984, at about 1 p.m., right after Gary Null came off the air, some new first voices were heard on WBAI. Me, Joe King, Hank Key, Dave Burstein, all of us were past presidents of the New York Amateur Computer Club. And at that point, we introduced the Personal Computer Show. With news of the newly developing consumer computer industry, interviews of movers and shakers in the software and hardware realms, reviews of various products, and answers for a listening audience that called in with nowhere else to go. Once a week, at first at lunchtime on Thursday, then later on Sunday night, or we moved to Tuesday night, and most recently we've been on Wednesday night, we took to the airwaves. From time to time, over the years, the people changed. Ross Greenberg joined the team for a while. Claude Eft engineered. Dave Burstein moved on to bigger and better things, and Alfred Poor joined us. David Perry, a nationally known security analyst, became a frequent guest and ultimately joined the staff, and Alfred moved on to other ventures. Panix, New York's oldest independent ISP, donated technical know-how and cyberspace. And Barry Weiser got us online with a website. A little later, Michael Horowitz answered an on-the-air appeal for help and became our webmaster and archivist. And almost 20 years ago, Stevie Deeby became our broadcast engineer. But through all these staff changes, the basic program remained virtually the same. The Personal Computer Show brought you news, interviews, reviews, and phone calls. Well, now we're in another century, and it's time for a change in our format. Following a trend in television and radio broadcast, the Personal Computer Show is going to gradually transform into a magazine on the air, with weekly, bi-weekly, and monthly features. Some of our contributors will be people you already know, like David Perry on security and malware, Alfred Poor, the editor of Health Tech Insider, on wearable health tech, Michael Horowitz on defensive computing. Other names like Jeff Fox on technology startups you may remember from long ago, when Jeff in the last century was a founding partner in Fox and Gela Software. That was before he was an editor at Consumer Reports, and he was a guest here on the Personal Computer Show. And we have some new names like Dan Rosenbaum, editor-in-chief of newsletter publisher Centering Media. He's going to talk on wearable tech. This new magazine format should allow us to bring you the latest information on the entire realm of consumer electronics. We look forward to serving you, and we really look forward to your staying concerned listeners calling in on every Wednesday night at about 8:30.
We have added a new member to the staff. His name is Jeff Fox. Jeff Fox has been a guest on the Personal Computer Radio Show twice over the years. In the 1980s, he was a software publisher, and as president of Fox and Gela, a pioneer of the PC software industry. Later, he became technology editor at Consumer Reports, where, for 24 years, he produced many important stories about consumer privacy and security. After he left Consumer Reports this past June, he founded stateofthenet.net, where he covers privacy, security, and, as he puts it, other things that matter. You can also find him at Jeffrey Fox, that's at symbol JeffreyFox.
I'm Jeff Fox for the Personal Computer Radio Show, and I'm speaking to you from the offices of the New York-based tech startup called X.AI down at 48 Wall Street in New York. I'm here with Dennis Mortensen, who's the CEO and founder of X.AI. The company is developing what it calls an artificial intelligence-driven personal assistant that can schedule meetings by email, just like a flesh and blood personal assistant. That's an interesting application of artificial intelligence. Your website says it was your long-term vision of killing the inbox that triggered the formation of X.AI and this new high-tech assistant, whom you often refer to as Amy Ingram. Can you explain a little more about that goal, how you plan to achieve it, and briefly describe from a user point of view how Amy herself works?
So I think it's almost a given that none of us wake up Monday morning thinking, ah, it's going to be real fun to go work that 140 emails in my inbox. And I think the inbox have turned into this chore, which you just do because it's part of your job. However, it would be lovely if at any point in time that inbox could either disappear or change into something for where I would like to come to work. Hey, I might have new customers, new partners, new opportunities, new press, new something in my inbox, but it's not. So we certainly thought about this whole idea of how can we kill that inbox? It's just such a huge statement that that's not going to happen anytime soon. Not today, not tomorrow, not next year. But if you go look at what are some of those really tedious tasks that are hidden in that inbox today, and what we saw was, for the most part, there was that traditional ping pong back and forth of you and I trying to set up a meeting. Can you do Wednesday? No. Can you do Thursday? Perhaps. How about Friday? Sure. Can you do one? No. Can you do two? Yes. But then only in midterm. Ah, then we have to push it to next week. That whole back and forth adds no value. And we thought if we could somewhat automate that, we might not kill the inbox, but we would certainly alleviate a whole ton of the pain was buried in that current inbox. So that's what we set out to do. No more, no less. Create a machine which can hold this human-human-like dialogue and go back and forth with one or more of your guests, agree on the date, the time, the location, any potential call information, and other things that need to go along with that invite. And that sounds, I think, simple. From an offering point of view, actually so simple that I can explain it to my mom. So what do? I help people set up meetings. End of offering. I think the hard part arrives for when you're trying to do something for where there's just so much human ambiguity that it can't be solved just through two or three if statements. If you suggest Thursday and I'm free, then set up meeting. It is just not as simple as that. Because people will say things that are either really hard to understand, or they'll say things that are technically incorrect or just not true. I'll give you an example here. You might send me an email last night at 2 a.m. saying, hey, Dennis, that chat tomorrow, can we push that half an hour? Because I'm coming right off another meeting on the Upper West Side. That is obviously not true. The machine will pick up the word tomorrow, but since you're up late, what you're really meaning is today. It's just a very human thing to say the word tomorrow because you haven't gone to bed yet. But the machine will obviously read the text, read tomorrow, and see that you and I are not even supposed to meet up tomorrow. And the simple response will be, we don't have a meeting, so what the hell are you talking about? And that just becomes real hard, because you can think of 1,000 examples just like that for where the machine might get it right, but the human meant something different. And that's that human ambiguity, and that's what we're trying to solve here.
Do you have any idea of the magnitude of the number of variations of that sort?
So we made a small personal bet of this being a pool. So as we jumped in, we hoped it would be a pool, swim around, get to see the corners, get familiar with the whole thing, and survive. But as we jumped in, there was that option, as you allude to, that this is not a pool, this is the ocean, and we can't see shore from here, and we're going to die, and it's really only a matter of time.
If you keep swimming looking for the corner, you're going to find yourself several miles out at sea and no way to get back.
Something like that. So we made that small bet of perhaps this is a solvable problem, but perhaps it is not. And I think a very good example here is to anybody listening that will have a Apple iPhone or a Google Androids or a Microsoft Windows phone, for where you'll have Google Now, Siri or Cortana, all personal assistants. But I think you need to put that word in big-ass quotes, because the word personal assistant suggests that it might align to that human that I have in the front office, where I can ask her anything, and she'll immediately understand, you know, what I'm asking her to do, and she can get cranking on that task. If I ask Siri right now, and you should do it just for the fun of it, hey, Siri, I had a good chat with Dennis today. Could you set up a follow-up chat in the beginning of next year, please? What do you think her response?